What is up, guys? So before we start the show today, I want to take a little bit of time to tell you about something I hold very near and dear to my heart, and that is Social X. Social X is a community of entrepreneurs working together to make a positive impact on the world, scale their businesses, make more money, and build their networks with like-minded individuals. They teach entrepreneurs how to go from zero to six figures, and their weekly mastermind calls feature top business moguls and entrepreneurs from various industries. They have online courses, they have amazing entrepreneur events all over the country, and much, much more. Now, if you're interested in learning more about Social X, go ahead and go to socialxmastermind.com. And let them know you came from this podcast. And, you know, I really genuinely believe you should join this mastermind because honestly, without it, this podcast would not exist. So go ahead, come join me within the Social X Mastermind. And let's go ahead and get on with the show.
Welcome to the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy Show, where we speak with elite individuals and top performers and seeing what it takes to stay healthy and get wealthy. Are you ready to be elite? Are you ready to be part of the 1%? Well, then without further ado, let's get it.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy Show. Today, I have another young stunner on the show, an elite entrepreneur. He started off in the e-com space, actually grew 2 six-figure e-com stores, and then from that, learned and mastered Facebook ads. So he decided to take that, go to local businesses, and offer them his services, and now he coaches other people to do the same things that he's been able to do to be, you know, an absolute baller. So without further ado, please help me welcome Joe Stiver. How's it going, Joe?
What's up, guys? Yeah, we're out here at Disrupt Week. We got together. We've been doing this podcast for a while now, and we're both speaking at the Disrupt event here in Puerto Rico, so we figured why not just get together one of these nights and bang this thing out. So
hell yeah. Getting it done, baby. We're getting it done. Yeah, you killed it this week, by the way.
You did as well, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, I wasn't even expecting to go up, so that's a story for another day for you guys. But yeah, it's been an awesome time. So yeah, what really got you started with everything? For those of you who do not know, like, who you are, like, what's your story and what got you started?
Yeah, I guess like the 1 minute background would be, got started about 2.5 years ago when I was in, you know, college. I was playing D2 ice hockey. Didn't really have much time for a 9-to-5 job. I was flipping stuff for like retail arbitrage online and came across dropshipping. Wasn't really too sure what it was. Thought it was kind of a scam. But saw a lot of people making money with it. I met somebody in my grade at school that was doing it, was pretty successful with it. So I bought a few courses, got scammed a couple times, lost my money, stayed persistent with it, and eventually took my first store to 50K in sales. Asked my parents to take a semester off of school, basically traveled around the country for 3 months, going to every national park, and built a brand called Mountaineer Gear, which was a camping brand. And we scaled it to 6 figures. I sold it off, dropped out of college full time. Scaled one more store to 6 figures. There was a company called Exo AirPods. It was a basically an AirPods dropshipping store.
Yeah.
And after scaling 2 six-figure stores, I sold them both off and started applying the strategies that I learned to my family's record label, at which point I realized that the marketing strategies for physical products could also be used for lead generation for businesses. So I took it a step further and started offering my services to other local businesses, generated some good results, and slowly but surely started raising my packages and expanding my outreach. Now I work with businesses pretty much all over.
Holy shit. That's a hell of a ride, man. That's a story that a lot of people in college can't say they can do. Cause I mean, definitely taking that leap, like, takes a lot, you know, being able to go in, not only just like take a bet on yourself, but take a bet on yourself so much so that, you know, I mean, you ended up leaving college and then like just exploded. So yeah. Like, what was the thought process about, like, was there anything in your past that really kind of steered you towards this entrepreneurial mindset?
I mean, I always was an entrepreneur from a young age. Probably not always the best way, but I always definitely expressed it from a young age. And I think what happened was when I got to college, I was like, I had partied throughout high school. So when I got to college, I was kind of over it. I'm like, why am I paying $150,000 to party with the same 30 people every night? I didn't understand it. And I took college pretty seriously. I had this English class that I never attended the actual class. But I did every assignment. I aced every test. Like, I never got a bad grade on any of the actual assignments or the tests that we had. So I, in my eyes, I thought I was passing the class.
Yeah, you're killing it.
I went to like one of the last days in the semester, and he told me that I was failing his class and asked me why I even showed up. And I was like, well, I've gotten an A on every test. I've gotten a B+ on every assignment. So how could I be failing? He's like, well, you haven't showed up. And that was when I realized that I thought college was going to be different than high school. And I realized it was no different whatsoever. I was still being, you know, babied and you know, held to show up to a class. My results were showing that I knew the material. Yet because I didn't show up, I was failing. And I was like, well, I'm not repaying for another course when I know the material. I obviously can pass the class just because you're upset that I didn't attend your class.
Right.
So It was at that point in time when I kind of started really questioning the people that I was learning from and realized the people that I was learning from never really did what I actually wanted to do in life. And when I dropped out, it was kind of like, you know, I knew it wasn't for me. I didn't fit in. It wasn't my thing. So it was kind of like, you know, it was a hit or a miss. Like I either go all in and make it work or I did what I did not want to do and go back to school. So in my eyes, it wasn't really a choice. So when I got out, I went all the way in. And then again, you know, I didn't drop out until I had a six-figure business. And
right.
Once I scaled to six figures, I was like, okay, there's no need for college. And I was like, this is a better resume than having a degree in the first place. So I decided to drop out full time. And once I was able to allocate, you know, 50% more time into my business, it kind of just completely took off.
Oh, absolutely. And there was there like, because there's a ton of different ways that you can make money in today's economy. Why was it that e-com really stood out to you?
I don't really think it was that e-com stood out to me. I think that I was just a desperate kid to get involved. And it seemed like it was like the best entry point into like entrepreneurship. I was just, I'd seen a lot of kids my age doing it, getting good results. A lot of them turned out to be faking it, however, but you know, the people that were succeeding, they were doing very well at a young age. And I realized that there was potential. So the biggest transitioning point for me was when I did drop out, I attended an event called Build Your Empire out in Arizona.
Yeah.
And I think it was just like being able to see people my age and younger than me, you know, more successful doing bigger things. And that was kind of like a push of like, okay, there's nothing different between them and me. Why don't I just, you know, go all the way in? And I went home, put my head down, and then 6 months later was speaking with some of the same people that I was attending in Arizona. So it's a pretty cool transition.
No, absolutely. And that's powerful that, you know, that you're able to see that at an event like that. Cause I know with like my own journey too.
I saw it with you, bro.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Social X, you were kind of just getting started with the whole thing.
And, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Months, 6 or 7 months passed now. And you know, here you are on stage at Disrupt. So it's just, it's cool.
Real.
It can happen in like half of a year.
Dude, it's crazy. But it's like, you have to put yourself in those situations though. That's the thing. Cause like leading up to that Social X event, like for me, I'd been trying, I tried e-com, Facebook ads, all the like bought so many fucking courses. It's insane. But that was like 2 years, but I wasn't putting myself around the people who were like ahead of me. So it was like, like I kind of wanted to go for it. It was like this, like whatever. There's no desperation really. But yeah, it's when you start going to those events, you see those people, like you said, like you saw people your age or younger, just like killing it. You're like, whoa.
It just shows you what's possible. It's like that 4 minute mile thing, right? Like you know, nobody knew they could do it until it actually happened.
Right.
Once I saw there was kids, like I didn't know that existed. I had no idea. I've been surrounded by pot smokers and lazy, you know, college. Like, I didn't know what was actually out there. And once I saw it, I was kind of like, wow, like I'm living life wrong. Like this is, this is the way things are supposed to be.
No,
I'm doing shit wrong. And I was like, I'm going all the way in and I never looked back.
Good shit. And then you made that transition from e-com to like Facebook ads. So why was there the transition that, or, you know,
What I tell everybody is what you learn doing e-commerce is a ton of different skill sets, right? So like you learn, you know, website development, sales, copywriting, Facebook advertising, social media marketing, product selection, you know, I could go on email marketing, on and on and on. The point is that you can take those skill sets and you hone in on one of them, just website design, just email marketing, just Facebook ads, or you can, you know, possess all of them and find businesses that need your skill sets every day. You know, marketing is changing rapidly. And although we might see it very, you know, commonly in everyday entrepreneurship because we're involved in the community, when you take a step outside, nobody really knows what we're doing. Nobody really understands how to track, you know, a Facebook pixel on their website or what that even means. And there's just a lot of potential when you kind of step outside of the entrepreneurship space. So, you know, it was just about taking those skills that I learned through e-commerce and realizing that, you know, I was only a 20-year-old kid. I only had like 20 or 30 grand profit from the last store that I sold off. And I was like, well, I either can use that to continue building or I can find a business that's got a six-figure budget and scale their stores and take a rev share or take a retainer off of them and make way more money and then take that money and reinvest it into myself and my business, which is exactly what I did. And I was making more money. And I also love the fact that with e-commerce, the problem was, although I was making good money, you have to constantly add new products, constantly change the store. And then when the second side of it was we were coaching people. So I had over 250 different students. And although I loved it, what I hated was that, you know, half of the students were getting really good results and, you know, were super satisfied.
Right.
And then the other half were people that didn't put in enough work and weren't getting results and then called you a scam when you've done everything to help them. So I hated that my reputation was built off of somebody else's work ethic. Because if you worked hard, they were getting results. And if you weren't getting results. And I was like, I'm tired of my work ethic, my reputation being, you know, built off the back of your work ethic. So I realized that with an agency, I have all the power. I have all the control. I control the results, and that nobody can say otherwise because I'm the one that's actually, you know, getting in there and getting dirty and producing the ROI for these clients.
Right.
And all that matters is if you pay me $5,000 a month and I make you 10 or make you 15 or whatever I make you, as long as it's over $5,000, you're profitable and you pull on new clients that might last a lifetime. So that's what we try to do with the social media marketing. I think it's just a better business model for myself, not for everybody, but I do believe that, you know, e-commerce was a pivotal point for me to get into social media marketing because I wouldn't know the skills that were needed unless I had built 2 six-figure stores in the e-commerce space.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, like, it's an anomaly story. Like you were saying, like, there's so many people that they go into these spaces and then they say that everybody's a scam just because, like, they're not putting in the work ethic and they don't get the same results.
Well, they don't do enough research.
Right.
They pay the first person they see that has good results on their story when they have no idea if they actually know what they're doing or not. You know what I mean? Or if the results are even theirs. So I think that, you know, we were talking with somebody at this event that got scammed pretty bad by somebody. And it's just sad to see because, like, you wish they would, like, you know, spend a little bit more time researching who they're going to invest their money with and making sure that they're actually spending their money on somebody that's actually, you know, getting results and doing this on a day-to-day basis.
Right. Absolutely. So when somebody's going in and they want to start their own agency, they want to get into social media marketing, what are the things that they should avoid?
Avoid?
Yeah.
Trying to offer everything.
Yeah.
I think the first thing is, like, you know, I tell everybody when you're starting off a social media marketing agency, the first thing that you need to do is pick your high income skill set. So
right.
there are a list of skills that businesses will pay high retainers for monthly, which are what you learn from e-commerce, the social media marketing, the branding, growing socials, press and PR, email marketing, website design, copywriting, sales on the phone, whatever it is. You need to pick a high income skill. Sometimes you can pick multiple. My agency specializes in Facebook and Instagram marketing, press and PR, and social media management and growth. Those are the three pillars that we work in. And then within the social media marketing, we either consult or do hands-on. So we either do the marketing for you or we'll consult their marketing team or that person on how to do it themselves. And basically what we do is we've taken those three pillars, we've built packages around them, and we figured out who our target demographic was. So step one is to figure out what your high-income skill set is. And then step two is to figure out who are you going to push that service to. Do they need your service? Is it going to make them money? Are they comfortable paying the amount of money that you're charging, and can they afford it? And if all those answers align, then okay, then you move forward. So once you have the high income skill set, you move into the niche. And then once you have the niche, and it could be a variety of different niches. I started off with a bunch of different people because I was producing results for everybody.
Right.
But I realized that e-commerce, construction management, and, you know, personal brands were basically my forte for what I like to do. So that's kind of what I honed in on. So pick your high income skill set, identify your niche, and then build out your back end, your websites, your packages, your offers, like, have your pricing set. You should never, you know, be in a conversation with somebody that's interested and then be like, oh, well, the price varies. Like, you should be able to tell them right off the bat, like, this is what it charges, this is what we offer. And then that way they feel like you're a professional in that space and they're much more comfortable working with you moving forward.
Absolutely. Damn. Facts. That's a lot of information you don't hear, like, in just the general public. I mean, you need to have those step-by-step processes for sure.
Yeah.
So going into all this, you know, because you were saying that you provided results for a lot of different people. Do you recommend people go for that general approach, or should you niche down, like, right from the start?
So I plan on niching down.
Yeah.
You know, I want to test the waters. I'm 20 year old. I'm not going to act like I know what I'm doing. Right.
Right.
I scaled a 6-figure agency. I'm pulling in money, but in all fairness, scaling a 6-figure agency is really not that hard.
Really?
I mean, it's really not. If we think about it, you know, if you have 10 clients at $2,000 a month, you're pulling in, you know, close to like $60,000 a year or something. So, like, you get a couple clients on a $2,000 retainer or a $3,000 retainer, and your next thing you know, you're making six figures a year. So 6 figures isn't really what I want to be at. I want to get to 7 and 8 and 9. And to do that, we're gonna have to take a lot of steps forward. So I'm not exactly where I want to be, but I think one of the main things is realizing that, like, you know, right now I don't know what niche is the best. So I'm gonna test them all out, see what, you know, what niches I can provide the biggest margins and the biggest results in, because then I can charge more money.
Right.
So the more money that I can charge in specific niches will determine which one I actually eventually choose. So I think that you should figure out who you're best with working with, and that should not, you shouldn't just determine right off the bat who you're going to work with. You should test a few out. Like, we were working with real estate. I said that wasn't a good idea. But personal brands, people that were selling e-commerce courses, e-commerce stores themselves. We work with a construction management company and generate leads for subs for them to help them close more contracting deals. So we have a bunch of different dentistries, chiropractors, and basically we're just figuring out, you know, where our biggest margins are coming from, and then we're going to hone in on one or two of those niches and then kind of niche down in the future.
Absolutely. So you mentioned that, you know, you're not satisfied with 6 figures. You're not satisfied with where you are now. You've got a vision for the future. What are those steps to get to where you want to be, and where is it that you want to be in the end?
So steps that we have right now, we're reinvesting just about 70% in back into the business. And that includes paying people to manage DMs, way more cold outreach, we're investing more money into voicemail drops and a bunch of other ways to just basically generate leads. And then we're also basically automating our actual process itself. So before I was running the ads, before I was helping schedule the content, now it's basically I just hop on the phone to close the deal, and then I make sure that the deal is actually executed properly. So it's about building out SOPs and making sure that we're taking advantage of time, so that we can have a scalability factor to it as well, because I can't take on 60 clients with one person. I have to build out a team. So I think one of the things that you have to realize is six figures you can do with a couple people. You can do it by yourself and just have a couple of VAs, for fuck's sake. But to get from six to seven, there has to be a really big transition into building out your team, having more SOPs, really just kind of building more of a scalability factor to it.
Boom. Facts right there. Yeah. So why do you continue doing everything you're doing? Like, why do you push forward? Why do you have these big ambitions? Why do you want to make something bigger of yourself? What are those main reasons?
I mean, you know, like, look at the world we live in, bro. Like, we're in Puerto Rico right now.
Yeah.
You know, like, enjoying, like, a tropical island while back at home, anybody my age is freezing their ass off in college. Right. Yeah. Like, you know, they can't travel wherever they want when they want to. When they get out of school, they might be having fun right now. I think that you and me can agree that we look at some people in college and we're like, damn, it looks fun.
But yeah,
like,
definitely.
In 4 years from now, the tables are going to completely flip. They're going to be stuck on a 9-to-5 job, living paycheck to paycheck, while we are self-sufficient and, you know, living an everyday life, being able to do whatever we want, working from wherever we want. And while we're in the clubs having fun and traveling the world and meeting people and making money, they're going to be working a 9-to-5 job with no way to grow. Right. And I think that what pushes me is realizing that, like, I just don't want to be the 99%. I like money. I like traveling. I like nice things. And I don't want my family to struggle. My biggest why is making sure that my mom never struggles again. My parents got divorced, and I was like, you know, I'm going to make sure my mom has a house and is taken care of, because growing up, I never realized it, but we didn't really have all that much money on my mom's side. And she would give me $20 and I wouldn't really realize it, but like, that'd be like the last $20 that she had. And it would be just so I could have a fun night with my friends. And like, she really would make really big sacrifices for me that I didn't really understand at the time, but now looking back on it, it's like my exact why. So a lot of people ask me, like, what are you going to do after you accomplish that goal? And, you know, I definitely, well, I'll figure that out, but right now I can't really see past, you know, just, I want to build a massive following and inspire people. But at the same time, my first goal is just to, you know, put my mom in her dream house and then be able to, you know, make sure that I'm financially free. And my biggest thing is just building a legacy. And I'm sure that one door will lead to the next, because, you know, 2.5 years ago, I didn't even know what e-commerce was. A year after that, I had no idea what a social media marketing agency was, and now I run one. So who am I to say that I'm going to know what I want to do in 2 or 3 years? So I let life take me where I want to go, and I kind of just take it one day at a time.
I love that, dude. Yeah, because, I mean, you get the questions all the time, you know, in job interviews or just even talking to people on the street. Like, what's your 5-year plan? Like, what's your goals? Like, I hate that question because I can't answer that question. I've got a vision of where I want to go. Like you said, you've got a vision where you want to go. Yeah. You have no idea where that's going to go in the future. You could be like,
I mean, I have like an idea. Like, I want to take like some of the money that I make from the marketing agency, and I plan on putting a lot of it into real estate when the recession does come. I have a lot of my money in stocks. I do invest pretty heavily. So, you know, I do have plans, but like, it's more or less like a lifeboat to like make sure that I'm constantly like having my money make money for me. And then when an opportunity arises, I'll have the ability to, you know, let's say, you know, tomorrow somebody comes up and says, hey, you know, we have a 20% guaranteed return on your investment, like drop $100,000. Like, I'll have the ability to do something like that. So it's just about like waiting for the right opportunity to approach itself and then kind of taking advantage of it as the time comes.
Absolutely. And then when it comes to when those opportunities come up, you know, a lot of times when you come up to these opportunities, it's scary at first to take that leap to go and do something. Like, how do you push past that fear of taking that next step to really
Everything's analytics to me. So I don't really go based off what could happen. I go based off probability. So I look like, when somebody gives me an opportunity, like, what's the plan here? Like, what are the numbers? How are we making our money? Where is it coming from? How much are we spending? Things like that. And I also look at a business that way, right? So like, you know, when I sold my six figure store for close to, you know, $75,000, I was like, okay, well, I can either take this money and I can invest it all back into my business, or I can, you know, hold it and have it make money for me until I figure out what the right approach is. So I kind of did half and half. So I invested some back into the business to help me scale, and put some aside to invest and things like that. So I was just getting started. I'm kind of learning when the right time to do that is. But it's just kind of making sure that I have the ability to do so when the time approaches itself.
Gotcha. Kind of like a calculated risk kind of ordeal.
Yeah, kind of. Like, if the numbers don't add up, or like it seems like it's risky, like, I get a gut feeling.
Yeah,
I trust the gut. You know what I mean? If something doesn't feel right, or, and I think it's the person too, like the person that you're working with, like, you know, when some, it's like somebody's word. Like when somebody approaches you, like, you know the type of person they are, that you know if they're serious and we're actually gonna make some money, or you know if it's like, hey, I should probably look out and be pretty careful about what I do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's something I feel like a lot of people don't trust their gut enough. Because, I mean, your gut's going to tell you what it's like an instinctual feeling. It's weird because, like, I feel the same way, yeah, where I know when to go do things based off of how I feel.
Yeah.
Yes, you can go through and, you know, I'm pretty calculated risk too. But, like, once you have that feeling in your gut, you have to go for it.
Right.
It's all a matter to me. But, like, how do you get over that fear, though? Because for some people, it's like you, yeah, get that feeling, but it's also there's a fear attached to it.
I think so one of my favorite quotes is I fear being ordinary way more than I fear failing.
Right.
Like, in my opinion, if I try and fail, that's 10 times better than if I just don't try at all and end up like everybody else. You,
right,
know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, my greatest fear is not doing anything at all. So for me, it's not really like I'm thinking about it or like making a leap. It's kind of just like, it's just instinctual for me. Like, yeah, it's like either I do this or I can get comfortable and go back to the life that I lived 2 years ago, and I'll never, ever settle for that. So that's kind of how I get over it.
Hell yeah. Fear of I feel that, because, like, part of me too, you know, I'll go around, you know, with the people I'm surrounded with in college and everything, it's part of me is kind of like, there's the college life I could be living, but there's something deeper inside that I know, like, I don't want to live a regular life.
Yep.
I fear regret.
Right.
That's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
At least for me. I know, because, like, it seems like from you too, you fear, like, you, not like fear, but you don't want to have the regret, like, oh, maybe I didn't take that risk. I didn't push myself. I didn't.
And part of me feels like part of me feels like I'm going to regret not going to college, but I'm not.
Right.
I know I'm not. The only thing I'm going to miss out is the 4 years of experience, and I'll make up for that in the 30 years past that when everybody else is living their 9-to-5 jobs.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what keeps me going and keeps me motivated.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's great, because, you know, even they say college is like the best 4 years of your life.
Yeah.
It's fucking sad, dude.
Yeah.
That's, you have 30, 40 years after that, bro. I'm planning on partying in a penthouse.
Right.
As opposed to partying at a frat party.
Yeah.
I mean, I still.
I just think it's too easy to make money. Like, I think it's too easy. Like, yeah. It's not to be, like, cocky by any means, but, like, yeah, I lost a couple grand, but, like, I also taught myself because I had gotten scammed from courses, didn't know who to trust. If I had just done my research and figured out a really trusted mentor, I would have saved a bunch of money and a bunch of time. But I think the fact of the matter is just, like, what do you got to lose, man? Like, you're 20 years old. If you fail a couple times, like, you can still go get a 9-to-5 job at Wendy's. Like, right. What's stopping you from walking into Wendy's next weekend and getting a job? Like, you can either try now and fail and then go back to a 9-to-5 job, but you can't wait 10 years and then try when you're, like, dependent on that paycheck every month. Like, right now is the time to kind of take risks. So why not?
Yeah. I mean, that's perfect. Cause I mean, you're like 20, 21.
I turned 21 in December. I'm still 20.
21 in December. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, like, literally perfect time. You don't have a kid. You don't have a family to look after.
Right.
You're 21.
Yeah.
You've got all this time. You got your whole 20s to go and take risks. But so many people are so afraid to do that.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, I don't want to lose money. But you literally said it perfectly right there. It was, go get a job. If you're afraid about money, go get a job.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
Like, if you're comfortable being complacent and being that part of, like, to operate, like, we need people to do that. Like, society's got to run. So, I mean, go do what you want to do. But at the end of the day, it's just like, we live once, and with the amount of opportunity that has been presented to us, my grandfather would be rolling over in his grave if I wasn't taking advantage of it.
Dude,
and I'm
right,
not going to disrespect my family. And, like, especially when I see the people around me struggling, like, knowing this is a possibility, not even a possibility. Like, it's, you can do it if you just put in the time and the work that most people don't. Like, even the people that I coach, like, people will pay me $1,000 to coach them. And, like, some of them get, like, incredible results, and then other ones just, they don't put in the work. Like, why are you going to pay me money and then not put in the work? I don't understand it. It's not about the money that you invest. It's about what your work, like, if you have the work ethic, you'll be successful. That's really what it comes down to. Like, what's your drive? Are you dedicated enough? Are you serious enough about making this happen? Or are you, like, focused on, you know, getting a paycheck next week? Like, if you're doing it just to make quick money, then you might as well just not even get involved. But if you're, like, you see the longevity of it, if you realize that you can hone in on on a high income skill, and within 5 years could be making, you know, close to 7 figures, if not 7 figures. I know people that have done 7 figures in their first, you know, 12 or 14 months.
Right.
And just to see that what's possible and to not even take a swing, you know, what's the point? Why would you not?
Oh, absolutely. And it's like, it's not that big of a commitment over the long term if you think about it. Cause, you know, you'll see all these entrepreneurs, they go on their social, and they're like, this is true. You know, you put in, you've got 12 or 14 hour days where you have to put in the work to, you know, learn, build that high income skill, build your business. A lot of people are like, oh, that's so long to do right now. But then on the back end, a 4-year job waiting for you. And you want to spend 40 years doing that, yeah. or do you want to spend like 12 hours today doing something that's going
to
make you like yeah. 600
And you don't even have to spend 12 hours. Like it yeah. could be a couple hours a day. Like if you're not right. like, unless like one of those people that's literally like needs to make the money this month, like you can take, it can take time.
Right.
I mean, an e-commerce story, sometimes what people don't get is they like, they'll build one store and they'll run ads. And like, even if they're running like their ads successfully, the product might not be a product that's going to maintain, you know, profitability.
Right.
It might not hit. It might work for a month. It might like, so you might need to test 13, 14, 20, 30 products before you get a winner. It's the same thing with the marketing agency. Like one of my favorite things, I forget exactly who taught me, but I was at NetCon LA event. Somebody said it. And it was that like you're 25 yeses away, 25 no's away from your next yes. Like when you keep that mindset, like, okay, every time I get a no, I'm just one more closer to yes. Like you never want to stop because you know, like if you knew the yes was coming, you would never stop. You know what I mean? So it's just about like realizing that it is going to come. And it's not about like, what am I doing wrong? It's about like, okay, how can I improve every single time I continue to go forward? Because eventually you're going to get a yes.
Yeah.
And then once you get one yes, it's 10 times easier to get your second, third, fourth, fifth, and then, you know, so on.
It's a numbers game, bro.
Yeah.
It's all a number. 1% every single, that's what I preach.
The easiest analogy is like, if you take a big net and throw it off of a boat, you have a better chance of catching a fish than if you throw a little net off of a boat. So right. like when we tell clients to reach out to 300 to 500 businesses a day, it might be a little bit more indirect and kind of cold targeting, but we're still doing drip campaigns, following up with them and doing the research and the data methods that are needed to kind of pull them in as a lead, compared to, you know, doing, you know, very strategic and personalized outreach to 15 businesses every day. Now, like we can do that, but at the end of the day, we've figured out that for every 1,000 leads, I mean, for every 1,000 businesses we contact, we pull in 6 to 10 leads. And for every 50 leads we get about $1,000 to $5,000, depending on the client that closes. So right. if we can hit 300 businesses to 500 businesses a day, you're looking at 2 to 3 days, 4 tops that we're pulling in $1,000 to $5,000, which is like unbelievable at the age that we're at. So, and then the best part about that is like, you could pull, what people don't realize is that like, yeah, you're pulling in a 3K client, but then like later that day, you might have a retainer that came in from last month that they still owe you $3,000 for this month. And then that comes in. So like, although you're closing clients consistently, then you have like your recurring clients coming in. So your income just continues to stack and stack and stack as long as you do your job as an owner and like provide results and actually generate an ROI, which is like our biggest, you know, obviously our biggest mission.
No, absolutely. So when it comes to not only just getting those clients, but keeping those clients, what's the most important factor for both?
I think communication is massive. Obviously, like, you know, like you can even provide results, but like if they don't really know what's going on, that can make somebody feel uneasy and like not really trust you. So I think just like from the very beginning, just giving them exactly like, I mean, to the T, exactly what they're going to be getting and then executing exactly on what you tell them you're going to give them. We have roadmaps that are sent to our clients every single week with like a progress report, letting them know exactly what we did that week. And you know, what the results are, what they mean, and then what we should do going forward for the next week. And then we'll usually have a phone call and also discuss it and go over it on the phone, answer any questions or concerns they have. Obviously, questions and concerns about moving forward as well, and then we'll help them build everything out. So, and then obviously at the end of the month as well, we do a kind of like an entire month thing as well. So, you know, this is what we did over the entire month. Here's where we started. Here's where we finished. This is the growth that we achieved. This is how many leads we pulled in. This many leads generated this much revenue. You know, you were profitable, you know, 20 or 30% or whatever it is. And then as long as they see the numbers, I think the numbers are the biggest thing. If they see an ROI, they see that they're making their money back and they're staying profitable and it's worth their investment of time. Of course, they're going to continue to sign with you. So it's just about providing results, doing your job, and like communicating effectively, I think.
Right. Yeah. That communication is key. Like the communication, from what it seemed like, it was the communication, but also like the complete transparency on like everything that's going on in the back end.
Right.
Just to show like exactly where their leads are coming from, how they're coming in. That's golden.
Right.
Yeah. So with all of this, you speak at a ton of different events too.
Yeah.
What got you into speaking? Like, how did you even get involved?
So I attended my first event probably. It was January of... It hasn't even been a year. January will be a year since I attended my first event. And then I
really?
Spoke at my first event in April. So I've only spoken at like 7 or 8 events. Like this year is the first year that I've got into it, but I love it. I think I got into it to answer your question. I saw that Vova, he's actually sitting over there.
Yeah.
Vova was speaking at an event. One of my really good buddies, Phil McCarthy, was speaking at an event. So I hit up Phil. And Phil was very local. He lived in Philadelphia with me. And I hit up Phil and I basically was like, hey man, like, how did you, like, where's this event? Who did you get in contact with? And he's like, oh, I'll put you in touch with Simon. So he threw me in a group chat with Simon. Simon basically just FaceTimed me and, you know, interviewed me, asked me a few questions about what I do and like what I, you know, what I stand for and thought it would be a good fit, brought me on. And what happened was Simon, at the end of the first event in New York, he posted a story poll. And it was like, who was your favorite speaker? And obviously, you know, most of them were for a lot of the other speakers, but I had a decent percentage of them say my name. It was my first time ever speaking. Wow. So Simon actually sent me a screenshot of that and asked me to come back to the next event.
Damn.
So that was my second event, which is also in New York. And then what happened after that is I had a bunch of content. So I started posting the content. I had a pretty big network on social media. So Anthony Mastalone reached out to me, and we talked about the Digital Growth Summit. So I got on the Digital Growth Summit. The NetCon LA came up, and then Disrupt came up. I met Anthony through the NetCon event. So it's just a big community, and we're all kind of tied into each other. So getting that one speaking engagement kind of just branched out and led to others. And I think my favorite part of this entire aspect is just like the people that we've met. Like, you know, I've met you through the events. I've met a lot of people that we're staying with in this Airbnb at these events. And like, you know, you meet a lot of really powerful people and, you know, people that can help you with your business and grow. So I think that's one of my favorite parts about coming to, for sure.
Perfect. Yeah. So if somebody wanted to either they're just starting or they want to get into the speaking game, what kind of advice would you give them into getting it rolling?
So I think the number one thing is like not placing the people who are speaking at an event as like any better than you. So like Right. You have to put yourself on a level playing field as them. If you like act as if like speakers or celebrities or like more successful or like whatever that is, you've already lost because like you're placing yourself as lower than them.
Right.
So like you have to realize there's nothing different. And then you have to go out and you have to execute. You're not going to get put on stage until you have some value to provide. So go home, build something, get some results, and don't be that guy who's going to flex, you know, somebody else's knowledge or somebody else's results just to get on a stage and sell bullshit. Like don't fuck up the industry. Like there's too many of those people already. So provide real value, get connected with speakers, you know, get in the same environment. I would say go to events. Like the reason that I was able to build the connections that I did that led to a speaking engagement is because I attended events. I attended Build Your Empire. I attended SocialX. I attended, you know, these other events that helped build the brand awareness of who I was and, you know, my network for that matter. So just surround yourself with, you know, successful people and then realize there's nothing different between you and them. And then go home, use that as motivation to kind of put yourself in a position to where you are able to provide value. And then don't be afraid to ask. If you have an event coming up and it looks like it's going to be a good fit for you, you know, just be like, hey, this is what I do. You know, here's a presentation that I've already built. Let me know what you think. If you think it'd be a great fit for your event, I would love to come speak for free, blah, 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 blah. And then I guess the last part would be offer to bring a content creator to have them bring extra value. So just see what kind of value you can provide to them. And just like I said, surround yourself with them and don't place yourself, you know, as a, you know, lower entity than they are.
Boom. Appreciate that. I'm going to be using that for myself. Awesome, man. Yo, this has been an incredible interview, man. I really appreciate it. I got one last question though for you.
Sure.
So I like doing this. I got this from, you know, Josh York?
Yes.
Yeah. So I got this from his podcast actually. So let's say you're the one conducting the interview and you were interviewing yourself. What would you ask?
That's a good question. Based off this interview and what we've already discussed, I would say that the question I would ask me is, what is one thing that helped you make that transition, that helped you, that sparked that change, that really, you know, did it for you? And I think that for me to answer that question would be realizing that I was not the same as the people around me. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
At first I felt like, you know, I don't want to act cockier if I'm better than other people. But the bottom line is like, there are people that are more advanced. And like realizing that you can't surround yourself with people lower than you because they're going to drag you down. I was going through a really bad time and I read this book called The Greatest Salesman Alive. And it basically talked about how you cannot transition your life. You cannot change until you change your habits, the way you view things, the way you feel about certain situations and how you view the world. I literally thought it was bullshit when I first read it. I'm like, yeah, one of these, you know, dumb motivational books. By the time I got to the end of the book, I literally teared up when I read the last few words. And it just changed my entire life and it changed my outlook on things. And it talks, what's different about this book than other books is there's different scrolls, okay? And there's 10 scrolls and each scroll is a different habit that you need to entail it with your life. Except the rule of the book is you cannot move on from one scroll to the next until you fully understand the first one. So you're supposed to read the scroll, which is a couple pages, every single day for 30 days straight until you fully understand and then you move on to the next one. And it helps you really hone in on, you know, one is, you know, I'm not even going to go into what they are. Read the book, experience it, and realize that, you know, when you change your habits and your surroundings, your environment and your life will change with it.
Facts. Holy shit, that was powerful.
Thank you.
Damn. So you mentioned something that was within this conversation. So outside of this conversation, what would be that question?
Man, you're like putting me on the spot. I think I'm about like value and action, right? So like when I listen to a podcast, I probably want to hear like what's one of the really successful pieces that like was pivotal to your success. And I think that would be my Facebook ad strategy. So maybe I'll just kind of hit them with like, okay. So I'll do one for lead generation and one for social or for e-commerce. So for e-commerce, I would say to start off single interest worldwide, excluding the, you know, third world countries. And I would do about 20 to 50 ad sets at $3 to $5 a day. So single interest. And I would target engaged shoppers with that. And I would basically let it run until your break-even point. So for example, just for the listeners who don't really understand, let's say I'm selling a t-shirt for $25 and I'm getting it for $5. That means I can spend $20 on marketing to, and there's no shipping cost. So I can spend $20 on marketing to break even. If I spend $20 on ads and get a sale before I reach $20, I've made money. If I go over $20, I'm negative. So I would let the advertisement run until the break-even point. So if I spend $20 on that ad set and it hasn't gotten a sale yet, it's killed. I'm going straight for purchase, straight from the beginning. And basically what I'm doing is for every ad set that doesn't generate a result, it gets killed. And for every ad set that you kill, you create two more. Facebook always wants to see improvement. So let's say, you know, you let an ad set run for 3 days, reach the break-even point, and it doesn't get a sale, cut it, you know, start two more with two more interest targeting. And then for every result, every interest that does get a sale, you're going to duplicate it twice and increase the suggestion. So I don't know if you're familiar with Facebook advertising, but for somebody that is, when you're on Facebook and you select an interest, let's say I choose baseball, right? Facebook has the options to click a suggestion and it'll give you all other audiences that are very similar to that audience of baseball. So it might be MLB or whatever it might be, right? So for example, let's say, you know, baseball has gotten 3 sales and it's generated me $60 in 3 days. I'm going to duplicate that 2 times and I'm going to select MLB. And then maybe, you know, Philadelphia Phillies or whatever those suggestions might be, I'm going to try it out. So for every winning ad set, you're going to duplicate twice as well and edit the suggestions. And then obviously rules are super important. So a lot of people get hung up on, you know, how to scale. I think the number one thing is if you're profitable with your ad set, you should just have the rules set up to increase the budget by 25% a day, as long as it maintains profitability. It's the easiest way to scale without having to edit things. As far for lead generation, it's a little bit different. You can't go straight for purchase. You have to kind of build brand awareness. So we take people down a strategy called the Venus flytrap, where basically you have one video, and the objection is video view. You just want people to watch the video. And there's no call to action. You don't need anybody to do a website. All you're doing is you're literally just kind of giving your audience who you are, what you do, why they should listen to you, and why you're an authority figure in your space, and basically just build some brand awareness. And then what we're doing is we're taking every single person that watched that video for more than 10 seconds. So if somebody watched more than 10%. So if anybody watched more than 10% of that video, they're going to get traffic into step two, which is another video view awareness campaign, which is very similar to step one, except all we're doing is we're just making sure that this audience is actually interested. So for two steps, we're just making sure they watch 10%. If they watch video one for 10%, they go to video two. They watch video two for 10%, they go to video three. What video three is we're actually giving them a call to action and actually sending them to a website. So now it's actually saying, look, you know who we are. Here's your problem. Here's why we're the solution. Click the link below to see how we can solve your problem. Traffic, we're bringing them to the actual website. For every single person that clicks a link or watches 10% of the video, we'll get a retargeting advertisement.
Right.
For anybody that doesn't watch 10% of the video, we'll get opted out. Or anybody that doesn't click the link will get opted out. And then with the retargeting is basically like an endless cycle. It just keeps going and going and going until we spend enough money on a client that they haven't been profitable. Basically like the ad set that of profitability. So for example, let's say our average income per lead for a construction business is $2,000. If we are spending $2,000 per client in that cycle of retargeting and we haven't closed a client, we're going to opt out and no longer run that advertisement.
Right.
So it's just a 4-step process, video, traffic, retargeting. And then obviously you can go more in depth and add multiple steps to that in multiple videos, but that's a very basic strategy to pull in leads for a business. And then for e-commerce, it's just about testing everything and anything. And then, you know, honing in on what works and killing everything that doesn't work right off the bat, not wasting too much money on a non-profitable ad set.
Boom. I hope y'all enjoy that because that was a lot of good tactical advice right there. I'm learning as I'm sitting here. So I almost start doing that for my PR and ad set shit. Stiver, appreciate you coming on the
show,
man.
Thank you for having me on, man.
If anybody wants to connect with you, how can they do so?
I respond to every single DM. So just at Stiver on Instagram. I'm sure you have like a link description you'll be able to throw down.
Yeah, it'll be in the show notes. Yeah.
Cool. So, but just at Stiver on Instagram, STAIBERR, shoot me a DM. I love getting DMs to say, no, hey, I was listening to your podcast. I love that kind of stuff. So definitely shoot me a DM. I'll get back to you. However I can help out, please let me know. But yeah, man, I think it's really cool. Just wanted to take some time to let you know that I thought it's really cool that, you know, how far you've come in the last 6 months. It's really cool because seeing myself do it and then being able to like look back and then see other people do it. It's just so cool, man. It's just really cool. And it just goes to show that anybody can do it. We're both super young and just get started. So
you just got to take that first step, people. Just take that first step. Well, thanks, man, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's episode of the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy Show. Feel free to DM Stiver and then myself if you have any questions whatsoever. And until next time, stay healthy, get wealthy.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy Show. My name is Chase Henderfit. I am your host. And if you have any questions at all, feel free to DM me on Instagram at Chase_Henderfit. And I have one favor to ask. Please just share this episode with one person. You never know who it could help impact. And if you share it on your Instagram story, I'll repost it on mine. So until next time, stay healthy, get wealthy.